Information is available at 359-7377. Open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner.
It's 1240. At India's Barefoot College, rural, poor, and often illiterate women get a chance to receive an education teaching them how to make their communities self-sufficient. The documentary, Solar Mamas, tells the story of a non-governmental organization that provides basic services in rural communities with the objective of making them self-sustaining. The film in tonight's community cinema focuses on a Jordanian single mother of four who enrolls in the program. I spoke with Illinois Public Media's Henry Radcliffe about tonight's screening.
And at this college, they're training these women to become solar engineers. They are learning to assemble solar panels and install them and hook up systems so that they can bring solar power to their communities. And they're training the women because the women will bring the technology back to the community as opposed to leaving the community with that technology and trying to find a better job someplace. Also, it's an initiative to help change the status of the women. Some of them are coming from communities where women are not trained or educated and women are not allowed to work. And you cannot just go into those communities and change them. The changes need to come from within the community. So the education is used to help the women see that there are better ways of doing things, and also to help the men see that by giving the women the ability to work and do things that they traditionally don't do, the whole community benefits from this.
And we learn a lot about the transformation this woman goes through in terms of making her realize she's able to do this. We talked a bit about how she's able to, get permission, or much to the chagrin of her husband, go out and pursue this this program.
First, she does have the permission of her husband. But after she leaves and goes and starts studying at the college, her husband doesn't keep up his end of the bargain by taking care of the children that she leaves with him. And so he continues to call her and tell her that she needs to come home. So then she does come back home, but the Jordan's Ministry on the Environment and the liaison between the Ministry of the Environment and Barefoot College talks to her husband and helps him see that they would all benefit by her going back to the college. So he then agrees to let her go back, and she does finish the program. And she is one of the higher students in the class. She does really well, and she comes back to her town. And when she comes back, the minister helps her get a home for she and her four daughters. And so she is immediately better in the community, but she's now able to focus on trying to teach what she's learned to other members of the community.
And this is part of a couple of different series through Independent Lens. I mean, this already screened on WYLL, and there's a whole series of films with familiar themes.
Yes, this is part of the Women and Girls Lead initiative and also part of the Why Poverty initiative. And both of these are initiatives that involve the internet, television, radio, and live events, and they are trying to focus on, the Women and Girls Lead are focusing on issues facing women and girls throughout the world. Here in the States, we think that everybody is pretty much equal, but in other parts of the world, women and girls are still don't enjoy the rights that men enjoy. And this program is shining light on some of those issues that are facing women and girls.
Anything else you'd like to add about the film and what will be discussed afterwards?
The film is interesting in that it often we think certain things are insurmountable for one reason or another. But we watch these 25 ladies go from just being regular women in their homes to learning the technology to build and install these solar systems that they've been working on for 6 months. And they do this with sign language, with drawings, and they do this across barriers that the women have themselves in that they don't all speak the same language, and they come from very different communities. But we watch them overcome these obstacles and become successful solar engineers, and that's something that we can all take away something from.
I spoke with Illinois Public Media Community Engagement producer Henry Radcliffe about tonight's community cinema screening of Solar Mamas that's scheduled for 6 at the Champaign Public Library. The post-movie discussion will include experts in renewable energy and electrical and computer engineering. Denmark plans to abolish its fat tax after barely a year, citing hardships on business and the poor. And while some Danes might celebrate by spreading on the tooth butter, other countries are watching closely for signs of whether regulating food works as a way to get people to eat healthier. Reporter Sidsel Overgaard has details.
Tooth butter. You know when there's so much butter on your bread that each bite leaves a stripe where your teeth have been? Denmark's obesity rate may be low compared to many other countries, but its love of meat and dairy had officials in the previous administration worried enough to levy the so-called fat tax last October. On a pound of butter, it amounts to about 75 cents. As Gundi Helfman wheels her shopping basket through a grocery store in the city of Herning, she says the tax has definitely changed a few of her habits over the past year.
Yes, it has. I haven't bought liver pate in a long time. It's simply become too expensive. You used to be able to get it for 15 kroner, and now it can be all the way up at 30. It's crazy. If you're even a little bit price-wise, you can definitely feel the difference.
The problem is that what's good for Danish arteries is not necessarily good for Danish business. Helfman, like many residents in this part of the country, indulges in shopping sprees across the German border, where things like beer and wine have always been cheaper.
When we drive over the border, there's more being bought than before. Other things. It used to be cigarettes and soda and wine. Now it's meat products. You can see it in all the shopping carts.
Those two things, reduced consumption and more shopping in Germany, add up to bad news for workers like Ole Skoll Christensen.
I work in a dairy business, so it was quite a shock to us. And we were afraid that our sales would go down. As I saw recently, it was going down 20%.
No surprise, then, that the Danish Chamber of Commerce has been fighting the fat tax every step of the way. Head of food policy, Lotte Engbeck Larsen, says it's been a struggle for producers and importers who have to grapple with an incredibly complex tax formula. She says this year the fat tax brought in about $250 million and cost $30 million to administer.
The tax is so complicated that you have to foresee a lot of administrative burden in the future as well, because the food market is very dynamic and food changes all the time, you know, new recipes, new product lines and so on. So therefore, you have to recalculate this tax all the time, and that makes it very burdensome.
Every one of these issues was cited by the Danish tax ministry in its explanation of why the fat tax will be abolished as part of the government's 2013 budget. But the real story, says shopper Karen Marie Massen, is that what hurts businesses and consumers hurts politicians.
They change everything around all the time to score points. That's politics at its height. It's just to get votes.
Like most Danes in this grocery store, Massen says she agrees with the goal of the tax in principle. It's just that right now, on the scale of voter concerns, there's no question that economics is outweighing weight. For NPR News, I'm Sissel Overgaard in Herning, Denmark.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by the Friends of WILL and by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store. Strawberry Fields offers natural vitamins, health and beauty products, household cleaning products, and pet foods. Strawberry Fields on Springfield Avenue in Urbana.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 13th of November, 2012. It's the day of the total solar eclipse. Today, Australia and New Zealand, the moon passing between the sun and the earth. It'll happen in Australia just an hour after daybreak, the most dramatic view in northern Australia in the city of Cairns. They'll have a complete darkness for around 2 full minutes. It's the birthday of Robert Louis Stevenson, Edinburgh, 1850. He was a sickly, moderately successful writer living in France when he took one look at a woman named Fanny Osborne and fell in love with her. She divorced her husband. They were married. They moved to Scotland. One rainy summer afternoon, he made a map of an imaginary island to amuse his new stepson. And in 1 month, Stevenson wrote his first great novel, Treasure Island, 1883, and went on to write Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in just 3 days. Robert Louis Stevenson, who said, "I travel not to go anywhere, but to go. I travel for travel's sake. The great affair is to move." It's the birthday of L.L. Bean, Leon Wood Bean, born Greenwood, Maine, 1872. He sold soap door to door. He was an outdoorsman, though, went hunting, trapping, and it was frustration with soaked feet in the wet, snowy winter that led him to invent a boot with a waterproof rubber sole and a leather upper. It was the Maine hunting shoe. He sold them by direct mail out of Freeport, Maine. The L.L. Bean Company was right upstairs from the post office. During the height of the Great Depression, L.L. Bean started issuing a seasonal catalog. Customers included Eleanor Roosevelt, Babe Ruth, and John Wayne. 1942 published his first book, Hunting, Fishing, and Camping, offering advice on hunting moose and reading a compass. L.L. Bean, who was still copy editing the catalog until he died at the age of 94. And it was on this day in 1933 that workers at the Hormel meatpacking plant, Austin, Minnesota, began the nation's first large sit-down strike. They sat down on the factory floor, and they refused to leave. Local townspeople sent them food and books and blankets. And a few days after it began, the workers in Austin won one of the nation's first industrial union contracts. Here's a poem for today by Michael Blumenthal entitled Sadness. Sooner or later, it comes to everyone. The beautiful prom queen who has lost a breast, the Don Juan of the 10th grade who has turned up impotent, the fleet chiropodist who has developed a limp. Sooner or later, it comes, and you are never prepared for it quite yet. You, who had hoped to be spared through another epoch of your rightful happiness, you, who had always given to charity, like a gargantuan tackle lumbering toward you. It comes and comes, and though you may double lateral all you wish, though you may throw a perfect spiral up the middle to some ecstatic receiver and be blessed blue-green some night by the ministrations of strangers, it will not spare you. It comes and comes, inevitable as sunrise